Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Julie Fedorchak. We are gathered here for an informal hearing on case number PU-21-082. I do not have any opening comments on this.
Just a small correction, it's 083.
Oh, I was just reading on the 083. Thank you, Victor. No big deal. So I do not have any opening comments. I'm joined by my colleagues, Randy Christman and Brian Crosius. In a second, I will ask them if they have any opening comments, but we'll also have staff member Victor Shook and two folks from Otter Tail that will introduce themselves in a minute. So with that, I'm going to see if you have any opening comments, Randy.
I do not. I'm ready to get started.
Okay. Then I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Crosius, who this is his portfolio. And you can take it from there.
Okay. Sounds good. I don't have any opening comments. Just look forward to hearing the information. So with that, I can turn it over to you, to the company, and you can start with the presentation, and I'm sure we'll ask some questions along the way and at the end for sure.
And just for the record, introduce yourselves as well as the people who are joining online.
Happy to. Well, thank you, commissioners and Victor. We're happy to be here to talk about a really fun, exciting project. And so I'm Joanne Thompson. I'm Vice President of Asset Management at Otter Tail Power Company, and I am the executive sponsor for our advanced metering infrastructure, which we're here to visit about today. And I'll allow Bryce to introduce himself, and then we can introduce the folks from Otter Tail that have joined us virtually as well.
Good morning, Bryce Helgen for Otter Tail Power Company.
And we have participants from Otter Tail virtually back. They're working hard. Several are actually engaged in some advanced metering infrastructure project development work today. So They stayed back, and Bryce and I got to make the lovely drive over here across the I-94. Virtually joining us is Carrie Stephenson. Carrie is our associate general counsel, so our legal advisor, internal legal advisor on the project. We have L. Kakeritz. L. Kakeritz is manager of our advanced concepts metering and land rights area. So this project is under Al's accountability. And you might recall Al from, he was the project manager for our Big Stone South to Ellendale 345 kV transmission line. He led that project that we jointly developed with Montana Dakota Utilities. And now we've got him on a very different type of project, which is integrating both the IT side of our operations and the OT side. So Al's doing a great job with that. And also with us is Kirby Kugler. So Kirby is manager of our SysOp support area. Kirby works in system operations, which is also under my accountability, and he's just got a legacy of experience with our load management, our demands response program, so which is very tied and connected to our AMI project. So pleased that Kirby could join us. And that should be all of our team here in person and virtually.
Thanks.
Great. So I'll just go ahead and dive in. I'll take the first few introductory background type slides, and then Bryce is going to tee up a little bit of the regulatory financial background on the project. And then we're going to turn the mic over to Al, who will tee up some of the project specifics. And please, by all means, ask us questions all along the way. This really is an exciting project. You probably know Otter Tail well enough to know that we aren't bleeding edge when it comes to technology. We like to wait till it's been proven, and we really feel the timing is right now with the AMI, or the Advanced Metering Infrastructure Project. Technology has matured quite a ways. And so now, as we look at the project, the maturity of the technology as well as the cost, I mean, it's become more economic as well. So the project is very cost effective from an O&M savings perspective, and it is going to really, it's it's a foundational enabler, really, for where directionally we need to go, even as you think about the expectations of our customers, with not only with providing insight for reliability, automation for remote connects, disconnects, but also the outage process. And the customer will be able to offer the customer even more options, even when it comes to real-time usage, different rates, and they'll have much more insight into their usage. So we're really excited about the benefits the project provides, and Al will certainly dive into more of those benefits. Next slide, please. Thank you. I know you're familiar with Otter Tail and our geographic location. We have about 224 communities that we serve in North Dakota, and about 60,000 North Dakota customers. And as you think about AMI, AMI is going to touch every single customer, so it's critically important that we get this project right and we have, you know, a solid plan of execution as we work with each of our customers to change out the old meters that we had to physically read now to the automated meters.
Joanne?
Yes.
When you say 60,000 customers, does that mean meters or like a customer that has multiple meters? Do you count those separately?
Can you help me out, Bryce?
Yeah, the 60,000 is number of customers. It's about 80,000 meters in North Dakota.
Thank you.
Moving on to the next slide, our AMI project aligns very closely with our mission and our goals, and always putting the customer expectations in front as well. So, you know, Otter Tail has historic low rates, and, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the timing is right. There are significant O&M savings that will eliminate manual meter reading, and the project itself will help keep our customer rates low. We don't expect a significant rate increase as a result of this project. The reliability that this will enable with having the two-way communications from the meter to the utility and the utility to the meter offers enhanced reliability, additional safety, especially as we think about the ability for doing remote connects, disconnects, and the restoration will be improved as well, because now we'll be able to pinpoint directly, you know, if there is an outage, where that outage is, how widespread the outage is, and it will really enhance our planning for being able to restore that outage. And as you're aware, I mean, we've got a tremendous track record for providing reliable service. Our field crews are stellar when it comes to outage restoration, but this is just one more tool in the tool chest that's going to really advance that situational awareness. And then it will also help the engineers on my team as we think about planning for the system. We'll be able to know transformer loadings and be able to be more proactive in how we plan the system, which, of course, will be an enhanced efficiency. And then, as I mentioned, for the customer, this will enable customers are so much more sophisticated today with higher expectations. You know, I think we've gotten used to having our iPhones and being able to just know what we want to know like this, and that's what they want to know from their electricity provider as well. And AMI is a true enabler there for them to see their customer usage, and as I mentioned, having different options to offer them. And it's really foundational for as we think about additional technologies that we're exploring. AMI is that foundation, and we can build upon that. And Al will share some of those details as well. Next slide. So we literally still have the old style meters. So we've got OTP employees and contract employees that once a month walk to every resident to read the meters. And so when I talk about some of the savings and the safety, it will be eliminating driving across this vast service territory that we have. In North Dakota, it's about 37,000 square miles that we're traversing each month to read the meters. We'll be able to reduce those safeties, the time and the efficiency, and then by not having those road miles, there's a safety element as well. Most of our meters today are about 29 years old, so certainly we've leveraged the meter life as well.
Photo is interesting. I had to do a double take. I was about to say that looks really familiar, but it's very very eerily close, but
it's
in Minnesota, I can tell.
Someone's lake home?
It might be close to someone's lake home, yes.
Next slide, please. So just to, I think if you count the dots, there would be about 244 dots in North Dakota. So this just is to illustrate the large area and why we're excited about automating our meter reading capability as we look at the large geographic area. Our focus would be on the ability to deploy our resources to additional useful tasks than just reading the meters. So our service reps, we'll be transferring them like to capital projects as we look at our aging infrastructure and the work that we're doing to our system. So moving them away from meter reading.
What do the colors represent?
I'm sorry, what?
The colors, you've got green, blue, and...
Yes, there's 422 communities in total through the service territory, mm-hmm. and just the difference in color is North Dakota service territory. Minnesota and South Dakota.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks, Bryce.
Quick question. Am I to understand that all of the meters today are read manually? Like with a person going door?
About 99%.
Okay.
You know,
I thought during COVID that we heard that there's only. Excuse me? What was that, Brian?
Those are just the indoor meters inside the house.
Oh, the indoor meters. Okay. Yeah. That's all right. The other people still went on. Wow. Okay.
Like that guy in that picture.
Right.
But I was actually thinking the same thing as we were talking about this, and then it
clicked that it was just clicked, indoor. Okay. So. I was confused that there was just a portion of them that had to be read,
right.
But that was because they're indoor.
Right.
Okay.
So of about 170,000, yeah, there's just a couple thousand that have that meter reading available today. Otherwise the rest of them are all manually read. Yeah.
Okay. I don't understand the next slide then, but I'll let you guys explain that.
The next slide? Let's jump to the next slide. Well, so what this is intended to illustrate is we were curious. We thought we were the last movers to go to automated meter reading, and so according to the EIA, our suspicion was correct. We are the last and only company to manually read widespread deployed meters in North Dakota. So the co-ops and our other IOUs have already advanced either to advanced meter reading, AMR, or to the advanced metering infrastructure, AMI, which is the next generation of smart meters. Nationally, across the United States, about 75% now has already shifted to the smart readers, so meters. So we're a little bit behind on technology, but again, I think by doing that, we've timed it well. And Al will go into those project specifics, but very competitive, and we've demonstrated that there's definitely a value both to the customer and to the power company. And then connecting it back to our demand response program as well is AMI will enable the communications backbones, which will further enhance our aging demand response load management program. So we're going to leverage those communications for enhancing that as well. So very excited about that enablement, so those mm-hmm. efficiencies that we'll gain. Is it Bryce's turn yet? Oh, and then just this final slide, and then I'll turn it over to Bryce. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the process here. Really what I'm excited about is, and I did mention this earlier, is now having that meter, the automated meter at every home, will have so much more insight into power outages. So as you're aware, right now we have to rely on our customer calling us. I mean, so I know this firsthand, not too long ago, I've only had two power outages the whole time I've lived in my house for 23 years, but once you know it was not too long ago, this summer, power went off about one, and I can tell, I looked at my email, I'm like, okay, this feeder is out of power, And I saw the feeder was restored. I'm like, yeah, our power isn't restored yet. So I literally had to call Otter Tail Power and say, yeah, we don't have power yet. So now with AMI, we'll be able to have the technology to know, you know, where the customers have the outage and be able to deploy our crews directly to that outage. And there will be a compatible outage management system that we're also exploring that will benefit from this as well. But it's such an enabler. We need to get into the 21st century with that technology. So that was just the purpose of this slide, not to focus so much on the outage process itself, but just the fact that AMI will be a game changer for how we're able to respond to system restoration.
So did you exhibit patience or did you holler at him?
Pardon?
Did you exhibit patience or did you holler at him?
You know, I exhibited a lot of patience. So at 4:30, it went out about 1:30. At 4:30, when I looked at my email and it showed that feeder was restored, I went back to sleep. So then at 5:30, we still didn't have the lights. So then I called and I had told Ron, we had to be to the Fargo Air Show that day. So I told Ron, well, I'm going to give them till 8:00. And then I'm going to have to find someplace else to go get ready. And I was walking the dogs, and when I walked by the house, I heard Ron's smoothie maker going. It was 7:45. So I'm like, yes, restored. I'm going to hand it over to Bryce to brag a little bit about how we work at keeping our rates low.
Here, just providing overall, Otter Tail's rates are low. Right here, we have EEI data. For the last 15 years, we're currently, our total average bill rate is 20% lower than the national average. And this is data that's collected, EEI collects this July 1 and then January 1 of each year. So this is winter bill data and shows where we're at compared to the national average and then our peers in North Dakota.
Is this across the board, or is this residential, or what are the rates are you?
This one's the total average rates, so it'd be everything.
Do you know offhand where the Minnesota number for Otter Tail would fall on here?
For Minnesota average,
for your Minnesota customers,
it'd be similar, okay. A similar percentage over the 15-year time span. I think it goes anywhere from maybe 18% lower than national average to 24% lower over this time period. But yeah, we've been within that bandwidth for this amount of time. And moving on to the next, as we look at the AMI project here, I'm just focusing on the total revenue requirements. Al will get in a little bit more into the O&M costs and savings, the benefits that come directly to O&M. But here, looking at the total revenue requirements, we've got the 2020 to the 2045 time frame, and the green line here and the black box call out with the white lettering there, that includes that's the total revenue requirement number, Otter Tail total system. For our system, about 40% of our customers are in North Dakota, 10% in South Dakota, and then about 50% in Minnesota. And so if looking through these numbers, about 40% of this would be North Dakota-related total revenue requirements. And then as far as what makes up, the total revenue requirements, you can see the big O&M as we move from left to right, we go through a deployment phase, peaking out at $7.1 million. That's in the peak of the deployment. It's a couple-year deployment. So as the meters go out, we have all the infrastructure in place. But until we recognize all of the benefits, there's this phase where the revenue requirements are a little high and then begin to drop as soon as we start recognizing those benefits.
I have a couple questions on this. So the light blue bar is the depreciation, I'm assuming, of the new investments.
Yes.
What is the reason? So it looks like about 2027 to 2028, it drops in about half.
Yes, we have part of that is the overall capital, but part of the biggest part of that drop is the depreciable life of the software.
Okay.
So we have, so we'd appreciate the software over that 5 years. Sure. We also have software like licensing fees and maintenance of the software. And those, I mean, those go on for the entirety of the project. But the depreciation change out that far would be the fully depreciated software.
Okay, and then the meters themselves would be over, what, 25?
The meters we have over 20 years 20 right years. Now. Yes. Yeah, the big part with the meters right now, yeah, there's that again, a little bit of a scope of, is it a 15 or 25, and 20 seemed about sure. about right for what we'd expect for a life of the meters.
Sure. And then just for kind of some point of clarity, I think I'm understanding what's going on here, but just for clearing it up, so there's dark blue both on the top and at the bottom, and I'm assuming the dark blue at the top is O&M for the new meter infrastructure, and the bottom blue O&M line is the reduction in O&M you expect from the lack of manual meter reads.
Victor, I think the dark blue is the property tax on top.
Sure.
That's the real real small, or it's a pretty small amount. The I should know if this is ocean blue or whatever the right color is, but the O&M ones that you see dip below or as a minus below the zero, that'd be like a net. Net of the O&M savings.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, because there would be, I would imagine there's a little bit of O&M increase with the new system and software and maybe some new folks to run it.
There are. Yeah.
But the net, so kind of that blue bar at the bottom is the reduction.
Correct.
It's the net.
And
correct. It's the net increase and decrease.
Yep. And the vast majority of it is that manual meter reading that goes away. And as we expect that those costs would go up a little bit over time, and the newer costs are far lower than, I mean, maintaining moving that forward. Yes.
Sure. But yeah, and then the green bar is just kind of the net of those two, the reductions with the increases, and kind of where that leaves you in a yearly revenue requirement.
Yes. Position. Yep. Correct. Yeah, the net of the revenue requirements above, netted with the savings of the O&M below, gives you the green bar of the total revenue requirement. Yes.
Perfect. And it looks like the O&M isn't going to happen all at once. You know, like you wouldn't look to eliminate an entire workforce that does this on a instantaneous basis. It would be probably over time, and I would assume.
10 years.
Sure.
Yes.
So
largely through attrition.
I think that one picked it up.
Where do the old meters go? Do they have them?
I'm sorry, what?
Where do the old meters go? Do they just go to recycling, or do they have to be treated in a special way?
Al, I think you can answer that one, can't you? Where the old meters go? Doesn't someone come and pick them up?
Yeah. It depends upon the vintage of the meter, honestly. As you would expect, we still have a need to replace some meters until we move into full deployment. So the newer meters... there's a market, some salvage market for the newer meters, and the older electromechanical meters will generally be disposed of. Our plan is that our installation contractor will have the accountability to basically salvage or dispose of the meters as we remove them from service.
And then another question related to the software. How do you factor in or project frequency of updates and associated cost? Is that built into the contract that for the life of the meters, software upgrades are included, but a lot of times they're not? Is that baked into the numbers? Because it can be quite pricey.
I believe it is baked into that, the estimates. Al, could you hear the question?
Yes, all the firmware upgrades for the meters and the software itself for the head-in system and the meter data management system are all in our agreement with our vendor.
Okay.
And those fees with those maintenance, those are included in the O&M forecast here, yes.
And one more question, what is the kind of the payback period? So at what point does the net of this kind of equal itself out? I mean, so in the early years, obviously there's gonna be more cost because it's new equipment. But those are, you know, balanced out by savings in the later years. What year approximately the guesstimate is of when the break-even point is?
Yeah, Victor, I think it's in the mid-2030s. I probably could calculate. I want to say it's like 2033, but I think that's about okay. Where it's at, that it breaks, or that the total revenue requirements paid equals the total revenue requirements credited back okay. In the later years.
That's what I was thinking, just
it's,
based
it's
on
about
this chart.
There.
But, okay,
yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Just a couple other things with this slide. Related to an average residential customer, so I showed some EEI typical bill information earlier. That was a total average bill, and this specific to a residential customer, over the deployment phase, it would be about a 2.5% bill increase during this couple. I did it over a 5-year deployment phase. From 22 through 26. So it would be about a 2.5% bill increase during that time. And then all else being equal, once deployment is through, we move into customer bills would be lower than prior to deployment in that 20. Well, you can see as it moves to that credit of 0.5, pretty minimal that first year, but that's where it shifts as a overall would be a credit, lower revenue requirements.
Do you have a recovery mechanism in mind? Were you thinking just the next rate case, rider, or?
Yeah, so I think you just identified the two options that we have, the rate case or a rider. You know, we have not firmed up which is the most appropriate just yet. A rider mechanism, I think, makes a lot of sense for this. I mean, it's a multi-year deployment. We've worked through, riders have been, I think, beneficial overall to all of us over the last dozen or so years, as we look at, we went rate cases about a 2009 filing until we didn't file again until for a 2018 test year, and a lot of that was a result of we had transmission riders, environmental riders in place, and those help bridge the gap where we don't need to do a full blown rate case for specific large capital projects. Whether that would be a established in a rate case. You know, when we were last in for a rate case, we established the generation rider to recover costs associated with the Astoria natural gas station, as well as, you know, who'd like plant. You know, there's an offset there too. So, I mean, a similar type mechanism established for this one would probably make some sense, but we don't have a September 1 filing planned of this is where we would request that recovery.
Sure.
Those are the ways that we're thinking about it right now, and probably would like to visit with you a little bit more about what's most appropriate to get that put in place.
Yeah, and I don't disagree on the points you made. I think either one of them can be used appropriately. A rider is maybe a better tracker for that changing O&M savings coupled with the new expenses. It could be a nice place to balance those out where customers aren't paying for a cost, and while the company is saving a bunch of money on the other side.
Yeah, we definitely agree with that, especially as you see we can maybe smooth some of that too, depending on what the recovery periods are over those time frames, and we have the ability to do that in a rider mechanism, setting rate for maybe a 2-year time period instead of just establishing once in a rate case. It probably feels better in a rider where we get those annual true-ups or a period of time true-up. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll pass it along to Al for the benefits of AMI, unless there's any other financial questions.
All right. As we look at the benefits for AMI, certainly we have a lot of them, and we chatted about it pretty substantially at our PI presentation almost a year ago. And, we really look at just, what can we do as a company and how can we really help our customers and not have, these grand expectations that, oh my gosh, we're going to have adoption rates of, even 20% or something for some of the different opportunities that AMI will afford for our customers. But, basically some of these items that we really feel strongly about are demand response system, as we've talked about it. Over the last year or so on and off, we definitely see our AMI field area network, our communication system that we'll deploy with AMI as being the new backbone for our demand response system. We do have an aging, aging switches in that in our communication system that we use for demand response, load control situations, and we definitely are in a state where we need to do something about that reasonably soon. So we look at that, we feel strongly about that. We look at, the low cost as Bryce just walked through with the group here today, and feel good about where we're landing with the savings really overall for our customer base, and see that as something that even without a substantial direct benefit, meaning an individual customer might do something with an AMI system, even without that, we know on the cost side that our customers should see a generous savings over time. And we look at the ability to implement different things with the AMI system, such as real-time metering, for example, time of use types of situations, or those customers that might be interested actually getting real-time or near real-time data for their homes or businesses, whatever they would be looking to take advantage of in that regard. And some of that, as we look at the technology that's before us and items that we're considering is since these meters are so advanced with the ability to actually assess what devices are being that are consuming energy in a home, for example, that could be available for a customer if they would like to look and see, for example, if their refrigerator or their air conditioner or some other piece of equipment that they're concerned about, what power consumption that may be using. And that would be, just the way the meter can sense different voltage, different power signals, and reasonably with a relatively high certainty assess that it is tied to one of those different types of energy consumers. And then other item that we've noted here, just using the meter level data to look at it for system planning and performance types of things. Certainly Joanne mentioned this earlier, but transformer loading, we will be able to tie our meters directly to each transformer as we update our GIS data and we pull those meters to each transformer. We'll be able to look at that. We'll be able to look at it at a feeder level as well. Substation transformer, map it directly to there and kind of on up the line throughout our system. Other kinds of interesting things that we're expecting to be able to take advantage of is on a momentary outage basis, looking at the data that comes in on a momentary basis and get a good indication of where we think that the cause of that momentary outage might be coming from. For example, a system anomaly, the data we get back from a meter, the closer into that anomaly or that disturbance on the system, the more information we're going to get from the meters surrounding it. And the further you go away from there, the less disturbance those meters will show. So we'll be able to focus our efforts even on a momentary outage basis as to where we should consider potentially tree trimming or other maintenance types of programs that we should undergo.
So I've got you going back to the benefit to the customer or benefit yes. to your customers in terms of energy usage. When the vendors are coming forward and just anecdotally do they say, and the benefit of the system is customers can save 5% a year on energy usage. Do they pitch that in terms of, I'm curious, what's the potential savings for a customer getting the information, the data based on their usage, maybe then entering into different energy saving programs, et cetera?
Well, that's a good question. Our vendors that we've been working with, through the RFP process have talked about different ways that customers have saved energy or saved money and energy. They haven't pitched a dollar amount so much that I can recall. But they have talked about the opportunity, especially on time of use rates, for example, to monitor their system and make smart choices or informed choices, if you would, as to the energy they may want to consume. They've also talked about the ability for consumers to you know, look at, as I mentioned, you know, which types of appliances might be drawing additional power, and then actually look into that and realize that, you know, maybe they have an inefficient refrigerator, or, you know, their refrigeration system, their HVAC system might be antiquated and should do something about it. So I don't recall them, you know, really pitching it too strongly. You know, we would definitely be skeptical, if you would, from our perspective, to say, well, wait a minute, we don't want to oversell something to our customers or anybody else as to directly what could they specifically say. But we do feel like there's an opportunity there, and we'll have to kind of manage that as we go forward.
One more question, or two maybe, Al. Do you have folks who are concerned about privacy still? When smart meters first came out, that was kind of a big wave, but maybe everyone's just sort of given up by now on the notions of privacy.
You know, we have had, I think it's in the last year or so, I believe we had one customer in South Dakota that expressed, even though we don't have a smart device really, deployed at all for the most part, but this one customer did express concerns about that kind of situation. So we expect there'll be a few that'll be out there similar to that customer concerned about RF types of things. But we haven't, you know, undertaken yet any direct communication with our customers about deploying our smart meter system just yet. We're more in the planning phase of how we want to go about that communication to our customers. And so we haven't, been too, I don't want to say in their face, that kind of sounds in a bad way, but too out there yet to talking about it with our customer base.
Sounds good.
We can address the security, though. I mean, so there are steps that we are exploring on the protection of customer information, if you want Al to elaborate on that, because that's clearly one of the things on, you know, that we need to address.
Sure.
Oh,
sure.
Yes.
If you want to just touch on that, Al, that'd be good.
Yeah, yes, that's a good point to bring up, too. We definitely have talked with the vendors about, you know, what is the data security side when it comes to the field area network and the and the communication system. And we have been we've been glad to hear that as PII is defined today, there is no PII information that'll leave a meter and travel through the radio system back to our back to Otter Tail Power. All of it will be a meter ID number. And then energy usage will be generally what will be transmitted through that system. But along with that, the data is all encrypted as it comes back to the head-end system, and that encryption is updated at least annually through new encryption keys and new firmware upgrades as well. So we're happy to feel like we've got a good handle on what that data security looks like.
Okay, very good. Then one other question. Oh, Victor, on the same topic?
No, go ahead. It's similar but slightly different. Go ahead.
Well, this is totally different, so go ahead.
So the data that's transmitted, is it just energy usage data, or is it demand information as well?
It would be demand if it's called for that in the rate, but generally it would be demand and energy usage. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm just wondering if normal, like residential-style meters would have demand information available.
They will all have demand available to pull back as a channel. Okay. And most of our rates don't have a demand component as it relates to our residential customers, but we will have that data available.
Okay. That was my larger question, is information available if we ever desire to go down that road?
It's
good to know.
Yes.
That it's there. So thank you.
You bet. Okay.
Good. And then one more question for me. How assured are you that there isn't some like game changer system that's gonna like around the corner or coming up soon that's gonna make all of this investment obsolete and something totally different will be there?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. And I think we've chatted about it and been cognizant about this as we've undertaken this effort recently. Our situation we're in right now is an industry. You've got, you know, kind of the big hitters that are in the industry. You've got the Itrons and the Landis and Gears and the Honeywells and such. And they've all either recently released a new meter or they're getting ready to release, meaning they've announced a releasement and the commercial availability will be coming soon. So as far as getting the most advanced meter, we feel like we're in a good spot in that regard. And as we're moving through our contract negotiations right now, significantly over the last day and a half or so, we've talked a lot about the fact that that we'll need to have assurances that our meter supplier, along with our MDM supplier, will be around for the 20-year duration that we expect the life of the project or the meters and the product to be. And then certainly there will be some upgrades that go along with that. But, you know, there's nothing that would bar some other, you know, substantial game changer from coming out 10 years, 15 years from now. But we do feel like we're going to cover ourselves to have a system that will last as intended. And so we think we've done, you know, or are getting to the point where we're going to have something in place that'll meet our needs.
Okay.
You, I think you alluded to this. And it was one of the questions I was going to ask at the end, but the numbers and the estimates, cost estimates, they're real time numbers. The application came in in February, and things are changing so rapidly with the cost of goods and et cetera. I mean, it's changed a lot over the last 6 months. So would you consider the numbers we're looking at on the presentation, do they match up with the February application, or have they been adjusted accordingly if needed?
Maybe I'll start here, Al, and say that the numbers provided on the previous slide 12, we provided in that February application a $50 to $60 million capital cost range. And the numbers included in slide 12 are based on, it's about $60 million on that. So we're on the high end of the range of what was submitted in February. And then maybe I'll pass it back to Al to respond to where things are shaking out right now.
You know, that sounds good. We feel good about where the numbers are as we were working through our negotiations. We're not seeing any, you know, potential substantial uptick in those numbers as we've been moving through this effort. So we expect that we'll still be in that range and you know, 55, maybe something like that, but definitely we should meet the information that we've provided in our filings and then again today.
Do you have any idea what this system would have cost 2 years ago? And the reason I ask, normally I would have never asked this question, but I look at lumber, for example, in the whole scheme of things and length of time, it was a short-term blip, but very pronounced, and to make sure you're not picking a high point in time cost-wise. Or you've been talking about this for a while. Have these numbers moved a lot over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess that's the advantage of taking as long as we have to get through this. They haven't changed really since we've started working on our business case. Certainly, you know, we continue to refine and relook and reevaluate and work through all that. But when we developed our original business case, which was the final draft of that was in November or December of 2018 already, our numbers really haven't moved too much. So, you know, potentially those, you know, might have been more conservative, and then we've, you know, maybe the market's grown into those numbers in some regard, but we, again, feel like that business case, you know, was a good snapshot, and we continue to match up to those original estimates.
Good.
I had one more question about where this technology, where the system comes from, and it seems maybe a little far stretched, but how do you ensure the security of it just from a cybersecurity standpoint?
Yeah, on the field area network, you know, I mentioned what we're doing there and what the vendors are providing for that. So on that perspective, we have security covered as it relates to that. And then we're looking at a software as a service situation. And we went through, you know, through all our RFP documents. Security was a big component of those. We've had our IT team be a part of that. We've also reached out to other utilities that have used these different vendors and asked them what they've done as far as, or what their experience has been as far as third-party testing of the security systems and their own testing of the of security for these systems. And everybody has indicated that the systems are, you know, as secure as you would need them to be. Of course, there's always going to be some hacker out there, I suppose, that potentially, you know, has a golden key to something. But at this point in time, we feel like we've done a better than adequate job, an excellent job trying to vet out security and make sure we select vendors that provide a secure system. There's multiple layers of security. There's encryption, as we mentioned. There's Active Directory management. So those are just a few of the pieces that we continue to track.
Okay, thank you.
Al, this is Randy. I've been kind of waiting for the right time. These two questions, I don't know, haven't really fit quite right in, but we're sort of bouncing around topics now, but within electronics. So I most of what you've told us this afternoon just seems pretty obvious. I think we're, you know, beyond the time of sending people out manually reading all these meters and everything, and time to move on. Although I just look at your projections and it just seems overly optimistic to me from my very limited knowledge of electronics, but none of this stuff lasts this long. And so I feel like while this is, from what I've heard so far, seems like a good move, I feel like you're portraying an overly optimistic thing about all these savings for, you know, over 20 years here, that this is going to last. And I just don't see much electronics lasting that long. Either they cease to work and can't be fixed and need to be replaced, or they, these companies are not dumb. They are making things obsolete quickly. And this just seems overly optimistic. So please respond to that.
Sure. You know, I could definitely understand that, for lack of a better term, skepticism, if you would, and wonder, like, how does this really come to fruition? I think one of the things that we continue to think through and remind ourselves is that, you know, the vendors that we're working with, even though over time they might have been GE or Westinghouse or Sahab Brown Bavari, and they might have names like Itron and Landis+Gyr and Honeywell and such. Most of these vendors have been in the utility business a long, long time. And so with that, they have an appreciation, I believe, of, you know, we're not interested as utilities, whether it be Otter Tail or XL or MDU or whoever it might be, you know, utilities generally aren't interested in, you know, going back and replacing their meter fleet in a short term fashion. So what we've seen with them is good product failure rates, down below 1% per year generally is what the vendor we've been working with is at this point in time. And so there will be failures. We wouldn't want to say there won't be a failure to a meter, but we think that we've chosen a vendor that will provide a good level of failure rate. We also are working with them on the warranty side of the equation for our contract to see what we can come up with that will reasonably help us through the whole 20-year period. Now, we're not there. I'm not trying to sell you on something we don't have yet, but it is definitely a focus for us to be focused on what our goal is for a 20-year system and how we can align our contracts to support that. So as we move our way through this, I think we're going to have something that'll work. And we do know that systems have been in place, 10, 15 years already. I know our sister company, our sister utility, Black Hills Energy, chatted with some of those guys a few years ago. They've got their system. They've had it in place almost 13 years already. So I don't see it as a stretch, to make it to 20 years with limited failures. And so that gives us confidence as to not overselling where I think we can land with our system.
Okay, and then my other question is, and I'm going to lay out an example from a whole different industry that's pretty fresh on my mind. If there is a failure in this, are we assured that it is limited to your ability to get a reading, or does it have to? Can a failure in this system cut off the delivery of electricity to that customer, even though the wires and everything are in place and it should be there? And here's why I ask. We just finished a case with a telecom provider where some electronic box that is not the kind of thing that anybody in the industry keeps on hand, they just don't fail, but one did. And it took 2 months to get one, and a couple dozen customers were out of service for 2 months. And we can't let that happen in the electric industry.
Right. Well, on that specific thing, if we look at, say, for example, a material defect, that's going to be part of our negotiation and our contract as well. We haven't specifically, I'm sure that there could be a situation where because we will have a disconnect in each of our meters, that potentially there could be a disconnect situation that might occur. We haven't heard that as being we haven't heard it as being a problem in the past where something would fail in that regard, but I could certainly follow up to see if there's any industry knowledge regarding a failure like that. But I have not heard of anything that would that has been a problem in the past.
Al, in that instance, if a meter failed and disconnected, we would be made aware of that, and at a minimum, we can send someone out though to ensure that it's not impeding the flow of electricity. Would that be a correct assumption? I mean, I don't think there would be, I can't conceive of any situation where a customer would be without power for 2 months due to the equipment failure of an AMI meter.
No, that is for sure, Joanne. We would have to have a catastrophic failure amongst multiple meters, because certainly we would have a replacement on hand. Under a failure situation, I would suspect we would get a disconnect notice from the meter itself. That would be not unreasonable to assume that.
Okay. Thank you.
Al, I think you said this, so I'm pretty sure I'm not putting words in your mouth, but you had mentioned the Itrons, the Honeywells of the world. Essentially, I think you alluded to you're going to be working with a trusted vendor, someone who's been at this for a long time. This won't be a one-off or a small operation that's just trying to get off the ground that may not be around in a few years, then you lose all support, et cetera. Is that an accurate depiction?
It is. And in fact, the vendor that we're working with right now, we've gotten really good feedback from other utilities that have worked with this vendor in the past and recently as well. So that is accurate.
And I would just add, so Al, I don't really know what that Gantner chart that we looked at, the qualification, but they're like a tier one equivalent, if I recall correctly.
In the Gartner Magic Quadrant, the last document that I had, which is a few years old now, but on the MDM side of it is the one specific information I had. Yeah, they were a top right quadrant provider of the meter data management system, for sure.
Can you talk a little bit more about the usage of your demand response program and how you see that maybe evolving? Because that is a key. This helps support that most certainly, and to others that might, other new technologies that might be coming on to DER.
Kirby, do you want to take that one? You've been quiet. Let's give you a chance.
Sure. We're actually in the process now of working to select a consultant and very close on that for a replacement of our DR system. And part of that effort with the consultant will be to do an analysis of our current DR program and then look at future trends, future opportunities that we could leverage going forward. We expect to complete that study during the coming year and develop an RFP out of that to go to various DR vendors for a response and to support a selection process beyond that. So out of that will come some insight, I guess, into how we tailor our future programs. But certainly I think with deployment of an AMI system, the default meter will have interval data capability associated with it, which would allow you to do more with time of use rates and those kinds of things, to be more creative there in applying those. It's going to give us more ability to fine-tune our controls so that we can have a handle on, a better handle on how much control we're actually getting, from our various programs, which should allow us to, tune the control to the need more tightly than we are now. And then, the two-way communications is going to be beneficial in confirming that control is actually getting out there and that the switches are responding in the different programs, so we can get confirmation back that, our system is working. If there is a problem, we can be much more proactive to address the issue and, get the switch back in line or get the particular control implementation working again. So definitely expect some improvements over our current system, which I think, as you're aware, is aging.
Do you have pretty good use of the DR rates now, or can you kind of quantify that a bit?
Yeah, Kirby, were you able to hear the question?
I did not hear that. Can you repeat that, please?
Sure. Kind of quantify the use of DR by customers now. How many customers are using it?
Okay. We have about a third of our customers who are participating in our DR program. About 42,000 switches we have deployed. Of that number, probably about 45% or so are in North Dakota. So we have a very good saturation of DR involvement. Some stats maybe on our control. On the average, looking over a multi-year kind of averaging, we have about 1,000 load type control events per year. So that would mean that, for instance, water heater control is one of our programs. Dual fuel would be another. If we control those two together, that would be two control events. So we have about 1,000 of those average per year. As far as control duration, again, an average number is approximately 800 load type control hours per year. So again, if we controlled two different load types for 1 hour, that would be 2 hours of load type control for the year. So it kind of gives you an idea of the activity. Typically now, the majority of our control is for economic purposes. about 90% of the control is for economics. So basically what we're doing there is looking at pricing. And if the market pricing is sufficiently high above our trigger point, and we look at other things like our day ahead and real-time generation and load. Now, based on those criteria, we will initiate economic control and control some of our customers. So we're seeing much more activity there than for capacity reasons. Years back, capacity used to be a much bigger deal within MISO.
That's interesting. I would not have guessed that. And on that last point about MISO, are there any benefits to be had for you in having greater DR capabilities for MISO? Like, will they be offering incentives, or can you take advantage of any better treatment through MISO or in the markets by having or offering, you know, stronger DR resources to them?
You know, I think MISO is looking at their load modifying resource capabilities, and right now they're only offering a summer accreditation, and load management is one of those tools or one of those items that you can accredit with MISO for, load or an LMR kind of a relief. And they're looking at expanding that, I think, and doing some revisions there, and maybe also including a winter accreditation kind of arrangement. And our system is set up, you know, with the load types that we have and so forth. Our max control is probably in the neighborhood of about 140 megs max in the winter versus about 40 in the summer. So we have, you know, more controllable load capability in the winter that we could leverage, with them if they went to that kind of arrangement. But, you know, certainly, you know, those opportunities exist in terms of capacity. And then I think economics as well, you know, we can certainly do, with a new system, we would have a better handle, I think, on our controllable load. So we could tune that closer, and we could control to tighter, bounds, if you will, on the control. So only control what's needed, no more, no less kind of thing. So it'd be more efficient control is the way I would categorize that.
Sure. And then in emergencies, when the market's tight, what kind of advantages might this, a system that allows you to tap into greater willingness for DR, what kind of advantages could that offer you guys and or your customers in, like, tight times, you know, when they're sending out these emergency ratings and, like, want more, need either less demand or more power? How might that benefit you to have a system that can allow you to access that capability better?
I think having a handle, you know, on our controllable amount, you know, through the confirmation and two-way communications is going to give us the ability to, you know, set the levels that we can contribute for capacity to more accurate levels. We have to be conservative now in what we can do, because we do a significant amount of estimating and modeling to come up with our estimated control amount. So we need to be conservative when we work with MISO on that to make sure that, you know, we can do what we say we can do. I think if with a system that meters that controlled amount and gives us more timely values, we'll be able to offer, you know, closer to the edge, if you will, amounts to in terms of capacity and emergency support with MISO.
So this, while it's a meter system, it could actually down the road serve as a capacity resource.
Could you repeat that question?
If you could quantify, say you could count on 140 megawatts of DR in the winter, and you have to have a certain amount of capacity in to meet the new winter seasonal peak that they're, or seasonal capacity requirements that they're going to be requiring of utilities moving forward. Could this not be a resource, a capacity resource?
Yes. Yeah, we could offer it as part of meeting that reserve margin requirement with MISO, you know, the planning reserve margin requirement. So we could offer it in there and do some offset to our capacity requirements in a given year.
And Kirby, just one thing to tag on here to this is, we talk about 40 megawatts during the summer for MISO's summer peak. Under our Module E capacity requirement, we get about 20 megawatts of capacity credit for our current DR. So like Kirby's saying, if we know that for sure we can count on those, that being there, I mean, there is some room there to move that up. So 40 megawatts of our summer peak is about 725 megawatts, where 140 megawatts for winter is our controllable on 900. And yeah. So that being able to close that gap to get the full credit to where that 40 goes to, I mean, there is definitely an advantage there to saying it's for sure available.
Yeah, you can count on it. Cool.
I have one other. It's a different question. It's not about demand response, but these are net demand meters, correct?
Yeah, the meters will be able to be net demand. Yep.
Okay, perfect.
Elle, do you want to jump into the next slide and just provide
I was just going to. I was headed there myself. As we look at the project and the project plan and where we're at today, you can see that we are in the middle of contract negotiations, as Joanne mentioned earlier. So we spent a lot of time through 2020, early 2021, getting through the selection process, and we're making good progress on working through the sourcing efforts labeled there, the AMI system, the MDM system, installation provider, and a system integrator. And as we finish out 2021, we expect that we'll have these contracts through any kind of substantial negotiations and ready for signature as we approach the end of 2021 and move into 2022. As we close out the end of the year or move into 2022, we're looking at design workshops. So we have to consider how will each of these systems integrate with our current CIS system. We're looking at a customer portal and some outage management, and they'll be considered as part of this plan if depending upon where they're at in those efforts as well. And then work through those design workshops and allow us, and then finish the field area network design and allow us to get ready to move into actual integration, and then our pilot phase or our proof of concept phase, however each wants to see that. But we expect to move into that in the middle of 2022, where we note our initial pilot deployment. Our contractor that we're purchasing the AMI system from will start in early 22. Noted there in the Q1, maybe it'll be a little bit later than that, but they'll be out to each of our communities and generally just putting up a box on a pole basically is what it's going to look like. It's called a gateway, a router, a collector, or the different names that might be out there. So they'll be out ahead of us doing that. We'll get our early deployment done in the middle of 2022, as I mentioned, and then as we approach 2023, looking at a mass deployment where we'll move throughout our territory, replacing all the meters with our AMI smart meters. We talked a little bit about customer communication, customer engagement, and how we're going to move through that effort at Otter Tail and engage our customers. We're just you know, we're working our way through our plan. We haven't really started the planning process yet, but we know that our installation vendor is going to be key to that because they'll be out, you know, in our service territory replacing the meters. So they're going to be a heavy, they're going to hold a heavy lift on that. And then as well with our own customer service people, our public relations team, and our employee group as well, making sure that we develop a good plan to communicate our efforts with our customers. And certainly, as we move to the bottom of the slide, there our training program. Mentioned earlier, we will be working through training with our AMI analyst and our MDM analyst, and getting those people up to speed as to operations of those systems, as well as data analysis to help us you know, drive the best value out of engaging or employing this AMI system. Any questions on kind of where we're at or where we're going?
As part of this, do you intend, so you had mentioned there's a number of customer meters still inside of the house or inside of the premises in one way or the other. Do you plan to move those as part of this project so everything is outside?
You know, we're assessing where we're at with that. At this point in time, we don't know that we're going to move those all out of the house. It's quite an effort to undergo that. You know, we know that when we put a meter in a house for the majority of our customers, they'll be satisfied with that meter in there and not creating a personal kind of privacy situation. And wouldn't necessarily be concerned about the RF item that we chatted about earlier. So there will be some that we'll want to make sure if there's a safety concern for whatever reason there might be, whether it's a customer problem or and generally, you know, the meter got into the house, many of them because people added onto their house and the meter was already there and then it got enclosed. In those types of situations. So if there is a safety issue, we're going to work with the customers to make sure that piece gets taken care of. Okay. Then we can go to the next slide. And really, I think I've talked to all this for the most part. Where we're at with the vendors was the first bullet point there. Where we're going with the integration pieces definitely is something that we're very focused on, and we're, as I mentioned, working with an integration consultant, somebody that has worked with our vendors before and has a longstanding history of being successful in managing and implementing integrations. And so we're hopeful that will go well, and we're planning for it to go well. And the pilot project, as mentioned, if things go as planned, then by next fall of 2022, you know, kind of finishing up that system testing and preparing for full deployment throughout 2023 and 2024. And then the customer engagement piece that I mentioned, I think previously on the last slide and prior to that as well. So I think we're in good shape to meet these schedules. We have opportunity to flex with our installation vendor to complete our plan on time, and we're excited about where we're at and getting through, you know, final negotiations and moving into actual implementation. And I think that's the last of the slides I have.
From a conceptual standpoint, I think it looks good. The one thing that was brought up earlier was, and I don't remember who said it, about smoothing things out from an accounting treatment standpoint. And as you know from Mericourt, for example, with varying degrees of how to go about it or, you know, thoughts, which I'm sure there will be different thoughts, but arguably this is even more pronounced because it's not just a part of the, you know, just a part of the pie. It's the whole pie when you're looking at the cost versus how we looked at the PTCs on the AmeriCorps wind project. So this is even more linear, if you will, and having ratepayers for the first, what, 7 or 8 years pick up the bulk of the pain, and then over the final 12, 13 years, you know, those ratepayers receiving the benefit. Seeing what can happen in terms of scenarios based on the accounting treatment, that was welcome to hear. In fact, I think you might have said that.
Yeah, probably Bryce. He's the smart one when it comes to that. So.
Thanks, Al. Yes, I think I did talk about it, and I think that's where a rider treatment, you know, we could end up with something new like a shook look or something like that, something new for Victor to work through. But I think that's where a rider treatment provides us some flexibility to make sure that we're treating customers fairly.
That's an industry term now. I mean, you can go anywhere. You could go to a convention in Florida, and they know what the shook look is.
Yeah, they all have shirts with the trademark.
Then you have to have a smiling face of Victor with a little gleam on his teeth.
Yeah, we're in California, and it's not because of the earthquakes. Yeah. So,
shook look. Oh,
so, man. No, well, I don't have anything else. I really appreciate the information, and we asked a lot of questions, which is good.
Couple more questions on the selection process. So did you put out an RFP? Have you picked the vendor already? Did you already say you've selected the vendor?
We have selected our vendors. We haven't gone public with the vendors that we're selecting, but we have selected different vendors. We do have the same AMI and MDM vendor, and we're in the middle of working with them on the contract side.
How many different vendors are involved in a project like this? Like, can you kind of categorize them?
Right now, we have really limited number of vendors compared to situations I've had on, you know, transmission projects. And part of that was our desire, not a firm desire, but our recognition, maybe that's a better way to say it, that if we had a vendor that we felt would be really strong in the AMI system and the MDM system, that we should really consider that, because that smooths out that integration between the AMI headend and the MDM meter data management system itself. So we have one vendor for that, those two pieces, if you would. We have a vendor that will do our installation and a vendor for our integration. And we do have, we are kind of looking at potentially some staff augmentations that might be separate from them, but it would be potentially related to our consultant that's been working with us through the RFP development and contract items. The only other piece that I would say that our vendors that I probably don't think about enough, but we've talked about here, and we'll be working that direction, but Kayenta Utilities, our provider of our CIS system, certainly they have an integration requirement, or there is an integration requirement with them, however a person would frame that up. So they'll be kind of they will be a vendor because they're going to have requirements that will come with it. And then I mentioned as we move through a customer portal, or potentially an OMS, as we look at those other systems as well. Just through the selection process of those, they would, in my mind, be a vendor as well related to AMI. So directly three, and then indirectly there, you know, three or maybe a few others.
Okay. And in the selection process, was it low bidder, or what were what helped you decide which ones to pick?
Yeah, that was a long process. So we were lucky, if you would, and I don't, you know, I hate to say lucky, like we threw a dart into the wind or something and it landed where we wanted to land, but we were very deliberate in our process, working through the RFP reviews and the demonstrations. And I say we were lucky because as we went through the AMI selection process. Our highest scoring vendor from a technology standpoint and pricing and things like customer relations with past customers and those kinds of other somewhat, you know, tangible but non-measurable items. The vendor we chose came out on top in both technology, pricing, and then, you know, like customer relations kinds of things that we were concerned about. And then as we worked through the meter data management system, it took a lot of effort to equilibrate all the different options. And I won't get into how that all kind of had to come together, but it took a long time. And in the end, when we managed our way through that, we generally landed at the same place. So, you know, they were all a component to the selection process, but in the end, our preferred vendor did actually have the lowest price as well. So that was a win-win for us.
Okay. Victor, more for you, since this is an informal and it's an ADP, so I'm curious how, and it's sizable, up to like the high estimate is $68 million on the chart that I'm seeing. So that's a significant investment that customers are going to be hoping for. How did you decide to go about an informal versus formal hearing process? And then have you had information requests back and forth with the company, or do you intend to do anything more of that, or how are you feeling about this project in general?
Sure. So I do have information requests that I had received from the company months ago that I've reviewed. I'm comfortable with their analysis. So from a cost point of view, it does pencil out. The assumptions that were used in the cost savings were on the high end of their estimates for, you know, in that range of, I forget what the lower end, $40 to $60 million, okay, somewhere in that neighborhood. The estimates used to derive here's where our savings come from were on the high end of those estimates. So that gives me some comfortability that we're not going to come in on the high end and then it's going to take, you know, an extra 10 years. So basically the things would be out of their useful lives by the time we start saving any money. So I like their the estimates that they used for those calculations. I did verify them, went through spreadsheets and the like. I don't think I have any of that stuff printed, but I went through what I feel is a reasonable review of the entire case, mm-hmm, all of their assumptions, and I feel comfortable that this is likely to result in a good result for customers. Now, with that being said, this is an ADP, not a final determination that the company will get recovery of it, but based on the information the company's presented and the data requests, I feel that it's a prudent decision based on those facts.
Yeah.
And at such time the company comes in for recovery, we'll review the details at that time and see if they line up with their initial assumptions.
Mm-hmm. So you felt like they're looking at kind of the worst case scenario,
yep,
by using the higher end numbers, et cetera.
Right, right.
What could go wrong? Like, where could we trip up and look back and think, hmm?
So, I mean, you know, the biggest one is those assumptions of the cost estimates. And I think they did a nice job today of going through, you know, while they don't have final contracts in place, I don't think, for everything, the estimates are coming in very close to where they were, or the contracts are coming in very close to what their estimates were. So that's one place that there's still some potential, mm-hmm, to go over even the higher estimated cost. I think Otter Tail's history of estimating is generally they estimate much higher than what it comes out with. So I feel very good about that piece of it. And then the other piece of it would be the savings side, which is the O&M savings from the primarily the FTEs and the contractors that are doing the meter reads. I mean, it is a pretty simple thing when you break it down. I mean, we're talking about an investment in infrastructure and savings based on headcount reduction and contract reductions. So as long as those two things happen, there's no reason for me to be concerned that the savings won't be there.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they don't drop those contracts for some reason, which I'm not sure why you would keep a contract in place if you have nothing for them to do, and similarly, either the FTEs move on to other positions within the company or move on to other positions over the, I think, a very reasonable time period of about 10 years.
So you don't feel like those costs are, there's not a risk of them overestimating the savings by that 10-year plan for letting people go? And
no, I don't.
Okay. Okay. I think that's, do you have any more questions, Randy?
I do not, thank you.
Okay. All right, and you said you're done. Pat, do you have any questions? All right. And the company doesn't have any more to offer?
Just thanks for your engagement. Great questions. As you can see, I've got a great team.
Yeah.
Definitely will execute the project well and come through with what we're saying.
All right. So is there any, since this is an informal and we'll likely be using this material to make a decision, is there any objection to having all the materials you presented and the audio recording becoming part of the formal record? None?
No.
Thank
you.
It's like an airplane. You have to have it on. Like if you're in the emergency row, you have to be recorded saying, yes, I know this. No, you're recorded saying no objections.
And Victor. No objection from staff.
All right. Then that will be the case. Everything today will be, and the filings, the recording, and their presentation today will all be used by us to make a decision. Are there any other matters for the record? All right. Seeing none, then I think this informal is now closed. Thank you so much. Appreciate you guys being here in person. Thanks, everyone on the phone. Great info.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Yep. Thank you.